Welcome to Films Apart, the podcast where we poke fun at buried flops, unearth hidden gems, and explore timeless classics.
So grab yourself some popcorn, sit back, and let's break these films apart.
Hello and welcome to Films Apart. Today's episode is Once Upon a Time in the West.
Ah, classic.
Yeah, spaghetti western epic by
Sergio Leone.
Yes. We're not going to worry too much about spoilers because
It's a classic. And everybody's obviously watched it.
Yeah.
Like we'd watched it.
Yeah, I've watched it so many times before this. No, this is my first time.
Yeah, mine too. Although I've watched the beginning before.
Yeah, I remember studying the beginning in my undergraduate.
It's one of those famous things, isn't it? I did a screenwriting course and that was studied in it as well.
Yeah.
And I can understand why.
I can't.
Why can't you? No, let's get to it. Let's get to it.
You just want me to go on a rant. I think, yes, maybe it was one of the greatest films of its time, but I don't think it can still stand as one of the greatest films of all time. Better films have come out since. Even for a film of that era, it's very slow. And for an opening, you don't really get much. Yeah, you get introduced to the hero. But okay. Half the opening's spent with other people who then get shot. And it's not like it's building these up as like epic villains to set him up to be like, oh, wow, this guy can like take three guys that are capable themselves. They're just drinking water out of a hat, washing their hands and bullying an old man who's selling train tickets.
Well, I think that the three people were known actors. I think that was part of it. So I found out after that there was a rumour that Clint Eastwood, Lee Van Cleef and somebody else, Sergio Leone asked them if they would be those roles.
Yeah.
Everybody would assume that they were the main characters and then all of a sudden they get shot at the beginning. Yeah. So I think maybe it did have that effect on people because those actors, well, they were obviously more well-known then than they are now, to us at least. Mm-hmm. So I guess it was that shock factor.
If it was something like that, then much more effective. But obviously I don't have much experience in Westerns, so these people weren't really known faces to me. Clint Eastwood would have been instantly more recognisable, I suppose.
But it does set up three people who you assume are going to be a big part of the film.
Yeah.
And then they all get shot.
Yes.
And killed. You see so much of them in this beginning, you just assume that they're going to be a big part of the film. I think that some of the reasons it's studied is because of the way it's filmed as well, isn't it? It's the sound. The
mise-en-scène.
Yeah.
That's the word that everyone always uses. But even then, I think there's better examples of how something's staged.
I'll be honest, I actually genuinely found it, and I've watched it before, I genuinely found it captivating, the beginning.
I found the scene after this much more captivating with the family. I feel that would have been a much better opening.
So let me just read a quick synopsis and then we'll go more into it. Okay, so there's a single piece of land around Flagstone with water on it, and Rail Baron Morton aims to have it, knowing that the new railroad will have to stop there. He sends his henchman, Frank, this is the bad guy, to scare the land's owner, McBain. Mm. This is the people you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But Frank kills him instead. And not only does he kill him, he kills his daughter, his two sons, and he pins it on a known bandit, Cheyenne. Meanwhile, a mysterious gunslinger with a score to settle, Charles Bronson, and McBain's new wife arrive in town. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you would have liked to have seen it start where the family get killed.
I think it's more...
But who's the protagonist?
Well, it's... what's his name again?
Harmonica.
His name's Harmonica.
Yeah, well, I think that's how he's credited as Harmonica.
Harmonica. Okay, that's a cool moniker.
So at the very beginning, when you've got those three characters who you assume are going to be a big part of it, Charles Bronson's character, Harmonica, comes in and he's the one who kills them.
Takes
and
them
he starts... He introduces himself with his harmonica, which I assumed was just...
Yeah, I think it's played like that. It is the score. Stuff like this I liked. And it's not to say I didn't like the whole film. I think it's more just this opening scene for me is film bro-y and the go-to. So it was so built up for me.
What film bro-y?
Basically, people who like films, they all seem to ruminate around...
Certain films and
classics.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, this is one of them, and they all share pretty much the same opinions as if it's outlandishly new.
It's interesting that you say that, because when I bought this Blu-ray from CEX, the guy who was there tapped the case and he went, "Enjoy Once Upon a Time in the West." And he said it in such a way that I thought that guy, he's obviously, he's like...
he works at CEX. Yeah. And I don't think there's anything wrong with liking films that are obviously classic and studying them. But I don't think it stands up and as enjoyable as people make out. It's a very slow film. Compared to Sergio Leone's other films, yeah. I don't really understand why this is one that stands out, because I think his other films...
Because I think that this is a comment on Western films, whereas the first three, you know, The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, mm-hmm. is full of dollars. That trilogy of films, from what I gather, they're more action-heavy.
Yeah.
They're classic Westerns.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a Western that's coming after, that's a comment on all the Westerns before, so it's a kind of...
Yeah, I suppose. Maybe it doesn't work for me because I've not seen enough Westerns for that to be as much of a shock.
Well, I mean, I only know that because I've read about it and I watched a documentary about it after and I studied a bit about it. Mm. So I agree. I mean, I don't have that background of Westerns to be able to pick that out of the film. Although there was a couple of moments that did feel a bit meta that I picked up on. So what's good about it? The beginning is tense, you know, they use sound, you've got the squeaking water mill, then
dripping
the sound
of water in the
dripping of water in the hat, the sound of the train coming, it's all in the sounds. There is a reason that people study it, and that's...
Yeah, there's some tension.
I actually heard that Sergio Leone had said, at the pace I'm going with this film, it feels like it's going to be 5.5 hours long. So we need to do something about that, which might explain some of the plot things that we kind of found that maybe we'll talk about.
Yeah, I think that's the pacing for me of the film. I feel like it starts off very slow, whereas I'm probably more acclimatized to things that start off fast.
Whereas I would have preferred it if it had been 5.5 hours. That's honestly what I felt about
really?
It. Yeah. I honestly did genuinely feel like that. I know that I fell asleep. I told Kyle just before this started that I fell asleep in the middle of it, but that's because I was tired.
Yeah.
I genuinely feel like the pacing was off for me. It did feel a little overrated. I feel if it had carried on at the slower pace throughout, I might have been more satisfied than I was.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
I think that's where... our differences lie. I prefer things to be a bit faster. You prefer things to be a bit slower in pacing. It's not to say I didn't love parts of the film, like the whole train scene where the guy's hanging his boot down with his revolver in it. That's great. I love that whole like action bit. I love the part where they have the deal with the $5,001 in the bar and then they come out and they have that sort of standoff.
Did you like that? Because that bit is when he aids him to kill his men who are trying to kill him. So did you like that because you were thinking it's intriguing, why is he doing that? Or did you just assume that he was going to kill him himself?
Yeah, it's obvious that he's saving him for himself, I think. I think even from the start, it's quite obvious that he has like a personal connection to this character.
Yeah. Let's look at some of the things that we learn about when we're doing the course, you know, motifs and things like that. So you've got this harmonica. That was quite clever. It was quite clever that you felt that the music was part of the soundtrack, but actually it was him playing the harmonica.
Yeah.
Although it didn't sound like it was coming from his harmonica.
I think with a lot of spaghetti westerns, they'd dub the audio over after, so even the dialogue, obviously, nothing was recorded on location.
No, you're right. But the skill is to make it look like it is recorded at the same time, and I felt like with the harmonica, they didn't succeed with that. Is that your alarm? Time to get up, Kyle. It's time to get up.
It's not a get up, it's...
It's 9:20.
It's for medicine.
It's time to take your pills.
Pill time. Go back to what were you saying before?
So the motif I thought was interesting. And obviously that was a big part of the plot in the end, wasn't it?
Yes. I thought it was an interesting motif.
But I didn't find it wholly original because it made me think... Have you seen Citizen Kane?
No.
It's a bro film or whatever you call it.
Film bro film. Yeah. I just know with so many of the films that are so highly regarded, I just know I'm not going to enjoy them. And I don't want to go watch them and then be like, oh, I didn't enjoy them. And then seem like an idiot because I didn't get them. I don't want to watch it and feel like I've wasted my time and been let down over expectation.
Well, that's it, going with lower expectations. I watched Citizen Kane before I would have considered myself a film buff.
Yeah.
Even a film fan, maybe. It was when I was younger, I watched it. I really liked it. I liked the story of it because it was newer to me. It wasn't something that I'd experienced in other films. But there's a motif at the core of that, Rosebud, which is revealed at the end. And it was a similar thing with the harmonica. You're like, well, what's this harmonica thing? And then at the end, it turns out that explains it all.
Yeah.
So it didn't feel wholly original. But then maybe that's one of the kind of meta...
Yeah, maybe that is
conceit.
One of the comments on... Yeah. I think with films like this, and like you say, Citizen Kane, like there's always moments in it. I can appreciate them as being of their time and key in the cinema movement, but I don't think that should be a reason as for why I should enjoy them. Is all.
No, you shouldn't have to enjoy something if you don't enjoy it.
Yeah,
I'm the same. I enjoy parts of it. Like halfway through the film, I was thinking, I don't understand why this is as revered as it is. No. And the reasons that I was thinking that, I felt, firstly, character-wise, there's not a lot of character. There's not a lot of character development. And in fact, the nicest moment in the characters comes at the end when Cheyenne dies. And with Jill, the woman in the house before. Mm-hmm. You know, those bits. That was the most character-intensive bits, really. Yeah. Before that, you've not really got any sort of characters. And I know that's not what the film is and that's not how it's designed. But for me, that's what I want in a film.
Yeah.
And the other thing was the story jumps around and you have to fill in the gaps. And I don't think that it does that really well. You know, that's why I was saying I would have preferred it to be 5.5 hours long, because I feel like it needed a longer time to say the things that it was saying. Instead, it felt like there'd been massive cuts in the middle of it and we had to go, okay, oh, so we assume he was shot here and we assume that that's when he went to the train and that's when he killed this. And I didn't feel like the film merited me working that out, but then maybe that's... that's the way I felt about it. And that's partly down to the fact that the characters aren't well developed in it. If the characters were more well-developed, I would have forgiven it more.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Like, I struggled with the scene before where it was... I think it was nice between... Is it Cheyenne?
Cheyenne and
the Jill. That scene was nice where he was like, I'm not right for you, but neither is he. I thought that bit was nice.
I tell you what, there was a really nice moment then. You know, when he goes, and he's not right for you either, and when he comes in, he's going to say, I'm going.
Yeah.
And then when he walks through the door... He doesn't say anything, and there's this great close-up on her face, and you see the moment in her face when she realises that he's going to go before he says it. Yeah. I thought that was a really, really great cinematic moment.
Yeah.
And there was moments like that in the film.
Yeah. But also, I felt drawn to her character. I feel her character was one of the more interesting, the other being Frank for me.
Yeah.
I thought the villains were better developed than Jill. And I don't know if as an audience we were meant to root for Jill getting with Harmonica, because he's just the least perverted of all the men. Like, all of them are just dirty bastards and he just happens to be the one that's less so.
But by the end, I was rooting for Cheyenne.
I thought,
was like, you know, I want him to get with her.
Yeah.
You know, and she'd turn to him and she goes, you know, you're not a bad-looking guy. And you think she's like, well, I'm going to settle for him. And I thought, that's a nice end. Yeah. They can have a happy life together.
But I just feel like her character was...
Because Charles Bronson's character looked perverted, I would say. He looked gone.
Allegedly.
He looked like a psychopath.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing with the harmonica.
Yeah. No.
He's tapped.
He was, yeah.
He's been affected.
He seemed like an odd... And this is probably why they did it, but he didn't seem like a protagonist. Yeah. He didn't look like a protagonist of a film. He looked, like you say, he looked deranged, quite wild. Whereas normally you have, like... the handsome, rugged guy play the character, but he's more of like a scrawny sort of...
Leathery rat.
Yeah. Yeah. Leathery rat bastard.
I actually think he was cast quite well, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think he was good as the character, but that character wasn't traditionally what you would expect from a protagonist in a Western film. And that's probably one of the sort of commentary angles on it.
He was a strong silent type still, though, wasn't he? But he just looked a bit kind of smaller, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree that the Jill character was really interesting.
But I just think the film was so relentlessly misogynistic towards her character, and she was really just like this object for lust, and maybe that was a commentary on Westerns themselves as well, or was it this is just how women were represented in film at that time?
I think that's a really good point, and I think it was a commentary on
on
the films, because that conversation that happens at the end when he goes... Those men outside are working really hard, the guys on the railroad. They would be really happy just to see you.
Yeah.
Which is, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But if you went out there and they slapped you on the arse, just
ignore it.
Forgive it.
Yeah, forgive it.
I felt like that was definitely a commentary on sexism and the times. It was the late 60s. All of that stuff had gone on already. Yeah. I feel like that was very knowing. Yeah. And I actually felt it was also quite sweet at the end when he slapped her on the arse. I know it doesn't sound sweet.
Slap.
No, but it was sweet because he was dying, you know. We didn't know he was dying then. Yeah. But like, he was dying, he slaps her on the arse and she forgives him. And then he goes outside and he dies. And it just felt like, I don't know, there was just something about it that it didn't feel misogynistic to me. Even though
I just think it was the fact that her character never had an issue with this, and she's constantly called it like a whore and degraded, and she's just okay with this because she thinks it of herself. And then there's the moment with Frank in the bed after he's kidnapped her, and he's like, are you willing to do anything so that I don't kill you? And she's like, yeah, anything. And then they're obviously making out.
It was horrible, hard to watch.
Yeah, it was a really tough scene to watch, and I just think, I don't know, I struggled.
But
I felt so sorry for her character.
But I also felt wound up by it, and I felt like this comeuppance is going to be... Well, I felt this comeuppance is going to be good.
Yeah.
Because he obviously was going to die.
Yeah. Then, as well, if they're making a commentary on the state of film and the state of how women are treated and how misogynistic it is, go against that as well. At the end, have her comeuppance, have her revenge. Her entire family is being murdered, and she just is willing to sleep with this guy and not fight back, and I think that's what frustrated me.
I think... Is it believable, though? Is it plausible? She was doing what she had to do to survive. I think, if anything, that was probably a comment on the inner strength of her. That's how I saw it. She seemed like a very strong person.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when she goes outside and she's giving him water, what it reminded me of, you know, in a Western, you've either got two types of women, really, and it's sad, but it's true. Yeah. One of them's a whore, and the other one's that kind of matronly woman who takes no nonsense.
Yeah.
And I felt like you were watching that woman at the birth of her.
Like a transformation from
like she
together.
Was strong and she was gonna run the town, essentially. She owned the town,
So
I think that that's probably one of the things about the film that makes it stand out from other westerns. What did you think of Henry Fonda's eyes?
They were the most striking thing of the film. I feel like I was captivated. He had beautiful eyes,
beautiful baby blues,
gorgeous.
Apparently, when he was cast in the film, he turned up on the set and he'd put in these contact lenses to make his eyes brown, and he'd got this little moustache and this beard to make himself look like a Western villain. And Sergio Leone was like, no, I don't want that. I want them to be able to see your beautiful blue eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want you to look like what you'd expect to be a hero of the Western and be a complete bastard.
Because all the characters that he played before that were good men. Yeah, you know, he's known for playing good men, and even all the characters he played after that were good men.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. And also it just stood out when you see at that moment when he kills the kid and he's like, are you going to kill him? He's like, well, you've told him my name.
Hmm.
And I really was like thinking maybe the kid will live, even though I knew the kid didn't. But like...
Then bang.
Yeah, and he's gone.
Yeah, I thought that was... Like I say, that was so much better of a setup for me. I would rather have started with the villain and then have that train scene afterwards. I just feel like it was much more compelling to me. And that's just my personal preferences in film. And
I don't know.
I think liked how brutal it was.
I think that it ties up quite nicely with the end, beginning the way it begins and ending the way it ends with the protagonist. But I don't know. It's an interesting film. So what about the music? That's obviously one of the things it's famous for as well. It's Ennio Morricone. He's got a very distinctive style, hasn't he?
Yeah, I especially liked with the score. I think we said earlier how the harmonica worked into it so perfectly. And then later on, obviously, when you have him, I assume his father being hung, and he's got the harmonica in his mouth, you have his cries out as this sound that's been playing throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's...
wailing.
It's like he's preparing himself to kill with this pain every time he plays that harmonica. Like you say, this wailing. I thought that was really strong. Like I said, there's aspects of the film that I thought were brilliant.
I thought
it's just that opening that
I thought the moment when she comes on the train and you see gradually more and more people leave and then she's left on her own was good. And I noticed the music then, and the music seemed to become more romantic and almost melodramatic, really. And yeah. I don't mean that in a bad way. It was like watching a silent film mm-hmm. because there wasn't any speech. It was just you were watching the town behind being built, mm-hmm. which really made me feel about what the West was. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what the film's about as well, isn't it? It's about the way the West grew mm-hmm. via a train, a railroad that runs straight the way through and all these towns popping up around it. It was about how America grew up, you know, how it came to be, which was exciting to watch. I found that exciting to watch and I found that exciting to think about. And I think that's probably what people loved the Westerns for. It was this wild frontier where people were starting afresh.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant, the shot where you had her at the station, and like you say, she's on her own for so long, and then she finally decides to go into the town because her family haven't arrived to collect her, and you have this pan upwards over the train station, and then this just the village of you see all the wagons coming through, like you say, with buildings being built. I thought that was a point that really got me. I was like, okay, this is quite an epic. And then, like, say about the music being quite romantic, I liked that at points, but at other points, it made that scene in the bed between Frank and
Jill.
Yeah, Jill. It made that scene even more uncomfortable to watch because it was this like romantic sort of music. I think that's obviously intentionally. You're not meant to be thinking like, oh, they'd all get it on. This is nice. It's like, it was really hard to watch, like we said earlier.
Creepy.
Even more so. Yeah, creepy.
I thought Henry Fonda was really hateful in that moment.
Yeah.
I did write a note here saying who was the protagonist because it was interesting to think on it. Obviously, Charles Bronson is the obvious contender as he begins the film killing the guys and then he ends the film going off into the sunset. Mm. But actually, I think that the woman is also a contender to be the protagonist.
Yeah, I'd say we see more probably with her than we actually do with Harmonica.
Harmonica's just like this shadow almost.
Yeah.
Again, his character is purely based on story. He's like a really silent guy who doesn't show any emotions. He shows the level of his brain in that he's able to plan how he wants to kill this guy, mm-hmm. obviously with very few words. You learn about his past in flashbacks.
Yeah.
Sparse flashbacks.
And I think that point at the end where after he's gunned down Frank and he places the harmonica in his mouth, I thought that was a really powerful moment. But like you said, he doesn't have any development really as a character, does he? So how could he be your protagonist?
I mean, I guess the point is that he wasn't going to have.
No.
He was dead, really. The other character, Cheyenne, talks about how there's death inside them and it was like he was dead.
Yeah.
He was already gone. So it makes you think. That's a sign of a good film, but then I suppose we're going into it thinking anyway, aren't we?
Yeah, I think that's why. I think if I just came along and watched this film, just knowing that it was a Western that was... No, just knowing it was a Western, I would have came in and really enjoyed it. But I think because I was going into it so much expecting, like, one of the best films of all time, I think you're obviously going to be a little disappointed. Because, yeah, in a filmmaking perspective, it likely is. It's done a lot, like you say. It's had commentary on the films that came before, a lot of which by the same director. So it is almost like a self-reflection in a way, which I think is strong. But I think going into it expecting a Western epic, I expected a lot more action. I didn't expect it to be quite as slow. Obviously, I didn't really go into it expecting character development. I got a strong villain that I was happy with. I liked
I got my baddie.
Yeah, I got my girl.
I was all right.
Yeah, I think just because of I've read so much and heard so much and studied that opening scene so much, I expected more.
Yeah, I think I did as well. Yeah. Because I've seen other films that have been, you know, classed as some of the greatest films of all time, like Citizen Kane, like The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp. I don't know if you've heard of that. These epic films, basically, that are epic, and there's Casablanca, you know, that might be flawed in some ways, but it's epic, you know, it's got that, Gone with the Wind, those sorts of things. They do have more to them than that did. But it was still quite captivating. It just lost me in the middle somewhere.
Yeah.
It lost me in the middle and then won me back over at the end. So anyway, the next film we're going to watch is this sort of companion piece to it, isn't it, really?
So next time would I watch Once Upon a Time in America by Sergio Leone again, which I assume will almost be a commentary on this film, I imagine.
But, you know, it's actually the third film in a trilogy.
Is it?
Yeah, there's one in the middle, but the one in the middle is not supposed to be as good as those two.
Oh, okay, so this is actually part of...
I've not
There's
seen
another
the one
Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, it's I think it's called I can't remember. The one of the titles is A Fistful of Something, so it harks
Hang on.
Back.
I found it. Leone's Once Upon a Time trilogy includes Once Upon a Time in the West and Duck You Sucker.
Duck You Sucker, but there's another
a
name for it.
A Fistful of Dynamite.
That's it, A Fistful of Dynamite, yeah.
Or Once Upon a Time, The Revolution. Why wouldn't you stick to that? Duck You Sucker sounds
terrible.
Crap.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to skip that and we're going to go Once Upon a Time in America, which I think is definitely, it's a different film.
You mentioned as well how there was different versions the other day when we spoke about Once Upon a Time in the West. I'm not sure what version I saw.
So did you see the one when he gets his eye cut out at the end?
What?
The Charles Bronson character has his eye cut out at the end.
No.
No. Which version did you? Well, I thought you watched the long one.
I thought I did. Did he actually get his eye cut? No. I was about to say this. I wish I saw this one. Dickhead.
No. I watched the 165-minute one, which I think is which I think is the more common director's cut one.
Mm.
On the Blu-ray I've got, it's got the theatrical and the longer one. And I watched the longer one. In a way, I wish I'd watched the theatrical one because I'm curious to see how they would have tidied up some of the weird plot stuff in the middle, or maybe it would have been even more difficult to fathom.
I assume we watched the same DVD because I think there's only been 3 releases of it, and the one I saw was definitely from 2003 because it's like the oldest film case you've ever seen. The others were Blu-ray restored versions.
Yeah, I watched that. There is another version that's in Italian that is longer. Apparently that's the longest version.
Okay.
It's in Italian.
I'm glad we skipped that.
Well, yeah. Would have been a bit weird watching an American film in Italian with English subtitles.
Yeah, an Italian-American film in Italian.
with English subtitles.
Yeah.
Shall we popcorn score it then? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are we at that point? I think we're at that point already.
Yeah, I don't think... for such a long film, I don't have a lot to say for it. I think because it's so different to everything we've watched up to this point, I feel like we've forged our own characteristics, how we talk about films, and this one just sort of had me lost. I didn't really know what to talk about it because I don't want to get too like analytical with things, but then also,
yeah. Look, the whole podcast journey is us just figuring out how we're going about this, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly.
How we're looking at films. Mm. None of it really matters.
Nothing matters.
And then they died.
Yeah. So, popcorn score. Do you want to go first?
I'll go first then, yeah. Okay. I would give it 4 out of 5.
Okay.
Salty popcorn.
Salty.
Because I did feel like it had some really interesting moments in it. I wouldn't have given it 5 out of 5, which I suspect many people would.
Yeah. This is hard for me. Because I liked parts of it. I understand it's key in film history and it's probably controversial, but I think I'd probably give it a 3 out of 5 or maybe even a 2, but I'll go with 3 just to be on the fence. If you disagree with us, overall that's 4, 5, 6, 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
You're
getting
good
at this.
I'm good at maths. If you disagree with us, why don't you chuck us a follow and messages on films.apart. So yeah, check us out on socials or on Spotify podcasting. Comment what you think. Are we wrong? What would you score it?
Wrong, yeah. He's...
Am I a complete idiot and know nothing about
are
film?
We, are we both complete idiots?
Yeah, because I'm expecting that, but...
Tell us
I
we're
idiots. I prefer
idiots.
Blockbusters with explosions and stuff. It's not my sort of thing.
I like a slow-paced film, as you know, but it hasn't got enough character.
Yeah.
So that's where it is for me.
Yeah. So 7 out of 10. Still a pretty high score, but for one of the best films of all time.
Yeah, considering Gremlins scored higher, I think people
Gremlins
would be
is a better film.
So Gremlins scored higher.
Bone Alone scored higher.
No, Bone Alone didn't. It was the same as Something in the Barn, I think. Was it
7 out of 10?
Did that
give
seven
that 7?
I think we might have given
7
it
or 8.
Seven.
Or yeah. Something in the Barn's a better
I
film.
I have a feeling it was 7, but yeah.
Yeah.
Controversial.
We need some publicity, so slack off a good film.
Right. We will see you next time.
See you next time. Bye.